Hello, and welcome to the NATCA podcast. This is Megan Roper at the NATCA National Office. Today, we're talking to Bill Gohagan, NATCA's Senior Terminal Technology Representative. Bill just celebrated his 10-year anniversary as part of NATCA's staff, and we're sitting down to talk with him about his many years of experience as a NATCA member, representative, staff member, and charitable volunteer. And so you lived in Mississippi for 46 years, is that right?
I did. When I started in the FAA, my first facility was in Meridian, Mississippi, and I stayed in Hattiesburg and commuted. I went then to Nashville, Tennessee, and the same thing. I kept a home in Hattiesburg and commuted there weekly, and then down to Gulfport, which I still kept my home in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, and commuted.
Did you come to the D.C. area for working for NATCA?
I did. When I started the job, we were told that I had to relocate to D.C. to have the job, and I relocated in November of 2012.
And at that time, what was your first job title working on NATCA staff?
I was the Terminal Technology Representative.
And now you are the?
Senior Terminal Technology Coordinator.
And what does that, what does your role as Terminal Technology Coordinator involve?
When the FAA starts out some of their new programs or wants to work on procedures or things like that, back when I started, we didn't have a large number of Article 114 reps. And we in the national office, as either the en route coordinator or terminal coordinator, would take our respective places on those groups and guide them so that we could make it the best outcome possible for the controllers.
Before that, you were a NATCA member, an air traffic controller, as you mentioned, in several different facilities. And I understand you've served as a NATCA representative in a number of capacities, including some elected positions.
I did. I started out as the... In 1987, when I first became an air traffic controller, was the very first year for NATCA, and I think I got in right before they actually got certified, or right after. It was very close. And being in a small facility in Mississippi, it was a while before the union movement actually made it to that point. When Meridian finally did get a NATCA unit there, the two people involved weren't very friendly, and so most didn't join after they left to go to another facility. I became involved in the NATCA group at Meridian first. I went to Nashville, Tennessee, where I was fortunate at that time. Rodney Turner was the representative, and we were just beginning to negotiate the first contract, and Rodney was on the contract negotiation team. So that was a wonderful presence to grow up in as far as union is concerned. From there, I went to Gulfport, Mississippi. When I was in Gulfport, I started getting more involved. I became the FAC rep, the national legislator, or not the national legislator, but the legislative representative for Gulfport to attend NATCA in Washington. After Gulfport, I moved to Savannah. I served as the FAC rep in Savannah twice, and also other positions in the union as I supported other people as they moved up and began to support the union. And when I retired from Savannah, this job was available, and that's how I came here.
So you talked about becoming involved in NATCA in its early stages, especially at Meridian, and kind of watching unionism reach Mississippi and those facilities. What was that experience like?
Growing up in the South, unions were very rare, and the only exposure we had to them was through what happened nationally. We would follow things such as the strikes that occurred up in the Northeast, other things like this, and I didn't really understand unions and didn't see the need for them. So when NATCA first came along, I was a bit reticent to jump right in, but after learning a bit more about the union and seeing the way the FAA treated employees, I decided that the only way I was going to be able to be treated fairly and to help my other fellow controllers be treated fairly was to not only be a member, but be involved.
And then you never stopped.
I didn't stop. It's one of those things that once you get going and you start meeting people and you start branching out, It becomes kind of a, as has always been stated about unions, a brotherhood. I don't know what it is under the new terminology, but it you meet people, you learn more about things, you find out things that you accepted as just normal for your facility or not the way it should be and you want to change them. I was unfortunate enough, I guess, to live through the White Book as a facility representative, and having that working relationship and then having it taken away through the lack of a contract made you really appreciate the fact when you were getting along even marginally with your manager and having a say in things was so much better than just simply the enforced work rules that we lived under with the white book.
Have you seen it bounce back since then?
I have, and it to me, it's amazing how far it swung the other way from the white book. We probably have 60 or 70 Article 114 reps today. A lot of the major programs they were trying to get done under the white book that were having so much trouble, once we started collaborating, just seemed to take off and become so much easier to work with and get pushed through.
What do you wish you knew, especially as, you know, like you said, building collaboration through or before the white book and then afterwards? What do you wish you knew looking back now?
Collaboration was something when we first started that was just an unknown quantity. Everything had been done through the traditional labor, the grievance, the other processes that are available in the contract. Collaboration, actually sitting down and coming to an agreement where everybody, while you don't get everything you want, everybody comes out at least for their best outcome and makes a good stand and supports it from both sides, was something that just changed the way facilities were. And when we had a management at a facility and a union at a facility that were working together for the betterment of that facility, it was amazing what we could do.
Almost like unstoppable.
Almost.
Almost. I want to give kind of a shout out to some of NACA's history, especially as it comes to the staff. You worked in safety and technology with Dale Wright. Was that the first safety and technology director you worked with?
It was, and I had known Dale back from his days as a Charlotte FAC rep in the Southern Region FAC rep meetings, and then he was on the finance committee, and he would come and talk to us about maintaining local finances and how to do it properly so that you didn't get into trouble. And when I called to ask about the job opening up here, Dale let me know that it was open and I could apply, but that he wasn't going to make any recommendations. He would just simply tell Paul and Trish that these were people he felt he could work with and they could make their own choice out of it.
You've worked closely with leadership over the past 10 years as part of NACA staff, and that's unique for NACA because as a workplace, our leaders are elected oftentimes and they come and go over the years, so the organization can change with the leadership. What's it been like to watch the union change and evolve over time?
As the older people, which I'm one, have moved out, it's been very comfortable to see people that have grown up with collaboration, with working with the agency, with being a part of decision making, and they're comfortable with it. They not only do that in an almost natural manner, but it is an easier job rather than the traditional labor relations of grievance and bargaining and all the rest that we went through back when I first started. One thing about that, I think I came in right at almost the beginning of Paul and Trish's unprecedented continuity there. So I managed to work with them for quite some time, which was very comforting in a sense for that. The change to the new leadership we've had here with Rich and Andrew has been seamless, and it's strictly because at that level, I think everyone has the same idea of what the union needs and how it needs to be working. And so there's not a large shift in the progress or the method of progress that we have. And seeing that go that forward that way, watching some, again, of the people that I grew up with, admiring Phil Barbarello and all of the other RVPs, Vic Santor, watching those people leave and other people come in their place, it's, while a change in personality or a slight change in the way things go, it seems like that the position of NATCA and the movement of NATCA forward continues regardless.
It's almost like it's not tied to any particular person.
It isn't, and that's a large part because of our culture, because we have meetings with our FAC reps. The Southern FAC rep meetings were were wonderful meetings. And one of the more memorable ones was in New Orleans on September 11th of 2001, when we walked into the morning of our meeting with the Eastern region, between the Eastern and the Southern regions, and watched the airplanes fly into the towers in New York. We had members who were from New York there frantically trying to find out what was going on. But that sharing of ideas, CFS, now ATX that's coming up, the FACREP school that they have out in Vegas that most people attend, and the convention and all of this, the way people participate in these now, and the sharing of ideas among the groups, the boards that are open for internet forums, things like this, where all that information is available, I think it gives us a unity of purpose and a unity of method for that purpose to move forward.
To keep the ball rolling, regardless of who's at the helm.
And to keep it going in the same direction, yes.
Who were or are your role models, both as a NACA representative and now as part of national office staff?
As a NACA representative, I think the person that probably most formed me, and this is back in the days when we didn't collaborate, was Rodney Turner. Rodney was a huge presence, both in not just his physical size, but in the way that he handled himself and carried that NATCA strength with him into meetings or other things. When I was having a lot of difficulty at a facility with a manager, Rodney and two of the other FAC reps in the Southern region came, and they were made into the facility representative for 2 weeks to take my place and help me try to turn that relationship around, whether it was either by discussions and talking or just simply by strength, in the sense that it could be worse. It would probably be better to work with me.
How about as national office staff, who would be your role models?
Definitely my role model, the national office staff when I first got here, was Dale Wright. Dale is an amazing person. We would leave NATCA sometimes and go over to the FAA headquarters just for what he called a drive-by. And we'd walk through the halls in headquarters and step into offices and stop and talk to people. And oft times we would find programs or discussions or things that were going on that we had not been invited to that we probably should have been involved with. And he would find a way to get us into those discussions and get our voice heard so that we could have a part in those decisions. And the almost effortless way that he could insinuate himself into almost anything like that was very impressive.
Having been a NATCA member at large, a local rep, and now national office staff in Washington, what do you wish you knew about national office activities and national efforts when you were a rep at your local facility?
Some of this wasn't available when I was a rep at the local facility until right at the end, but I wish I knew all of the options that were available to members to participate here at the national level as subject matter experts, as members on a human in the loop experiment where you sit down and you run through things for them to look and see how they actually will work, where you can volunteer to be a part-time or a full-time Article 114 rep and get your voice heard. Because one of the most probably impressive things that ever happened to me as a national office staff member was being in a group discussing, being NACA's representative in that group, and one of the former secretaries of transportation turns and says, "Bill, what do you think?" And I'm thinking about that little kid from high school in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, who is sitting in a room in D.C., and the former secretary of transportation wants to know what I think about something because I'm the voice for NATCA in the room. It's something that is unique among controllers, that sitting in front of that scope, being that person, having that responsibility, when you look at it and they try to change something, there's always a resistance to change, but being able to see this helps, this doesn't, this is good, this is not, and have that input at the beginning instead of trying to fix it on the back end is wonderful.
What are you looking forward to on behalf of NATCA and on behalf of staff that's on the horizon?
January of this year, we finalized negotiations on operational risk management. In June of this year, the Tech Ops group finally got their negotiations finalized for operational risk management, and operational risk management went into effect. Everybody is slowly catching up to exactly what's going on with operational risk management, but I think that that is probably going to be the one thing that I have worked on that will have the greatest impact on safety going into the future, and I'm very proud of that.
In addition to your hobbies and activities that you do outside of work to avoid driving your wife crazy, I know that you and Denise also volunteer with the NATCA Charitable Foundation, along with several members of your family. You've attended a number of national and DC events. What activities have you been a part of lately, or what's coming up for some of those activities?
The NATCA Charitable Foundation is an amazing group of people. It's an amazing organization in the sense that everybody who works for it is a volunteer, and the overhead that actually takes any money out of the Charitable Foundation is very minimal, and almost all of the monies are divided among many types of things. We've done backpack drives here at the national office. We've had the various Communicating for Safety, NATCA in Washington fundraising events. It's been wonderful to be involved with them and to see the impact in my own personal family. My daughter needed a service dog at one point, and NATCA Charitable helped donate to that so that my daughter could have a service dog to help.
It really has been a brotherhood to be part of NATCA.
It really has. Family. And the people that I have met and remember through this will be people that I will never forget.
Thanks, Bill. Do you have anything else you'd like to add, or what's on the horizon for you?
I would like to add one thing to recommend that people look for ways to get involved, because when I was a FAC rep, it was almost always members coming up to me and it's like, you need to do something about this, you need to do something, or somebody needs to do something about this. And so I remember years ago, the motto more or less was be somebody. So if there's somebody that needs to do something about that, be that somebody, get involved with NATCA, and you be a part of doing it, because you'll be amazed not only what you get back out of it, but what you can accomplish for your fellow controllers with it.
Thank you again, Bill, for sitting down and talking with us today. Again, I'm Megan Roper for the NATCA podcast.
Thank you, Megan.